Hi, John Benson from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba here. And we've made it to the fourth and final episode following Lady Winnipeg and Mr. Manitoba, a pair of American kestrels who have taken up residence at the property of Kim Bisson and Rick Onsky in the outskirts of Winnipeg. Over the last three episodes, we've seen them show up, stake out a nest, lay five eggs, have them all hatch, and grow according to schedule. Today, we're going to check in with Kim and Rick to see how they fared when approaching the most dangerous and vulnerable time of their lives, leaving the nest. Let's go. Okay, so let's start by talking about the fledging process for these five. What day did they start heading out, and how long until they were all gone, I guess, even though they're not totally gone? It's a little bit of come and go with that at this point.
Okay. The fledge actually spanned over 5 days, which we have seen definitely over multiple days in the past. So the first female, she left the box at on June the 29th, so 28 days after the hatch. And it was in the evening, and she stayed out there for a little bit, and then she came back into the box. So they all stayed the night on June the 29th. And then the next day, she came out of the box, and she actually did a couple of back and forth, annoying her siblings, and then she did take her first flight. The second female, she came out of the box, and she kind of was on the branches, hopping around, doing a little bit, and then she actually slipped, making a hop. And she didn't hit the ground because there's a couple of branches lower and whatnot. She ended up climbing her way back. And there's a branch in sort of the front of the box. We call it the door branch. And she was making gestures like she was going to go back. She wasn't quite ready. So she went back into the box. And sure enough, who follows her but the first female that fledged? So there was a lot of that going on those early days. So the second female that had actually officially fledged but hadn't yet flown, she did stay the night. So then we had on June the 30th, we had one female and the three males spend the night. Then on July 1st, we had one of the males decide, okay, it's my turn to leave the nest. So he fledged. And then the second female who had spent the night, she decided, okay, yeah, it's my turn now. And she actually left and she flew. So the first male, because just to recap, we had three males. So the first male, he slipped a little bit, and then he did lots of repeatedly going back and forth in the box, out of the box, in the box, out of the box. I think over a span of a couple of hours, like he did this like five times. And the other two males that were in the box were just like, there were times where they were just looking at him. So anyway, he did that numerous times, but he ended up on July the 1st, he stayed the night. So we had the three junior males spend the night. And then July the 2nd, that male that had gone out the night before or the day before, he decided, okay, it's time for me to fly. So he flew. And the interesting thing was that the second male, he fledged, but he flew right out of the box. He didn't do any of the branching like the other ones. He didn't go back and forth. And he actually just flew right from the box.
Wow.
So one male was all alone. We had a couple of viewers sending us emails. Oh, he looks so lonely. And then the following day, July 3rd, so he was the youngest, he was the smallest. And in the morning, he left the box. He did try to do a little bit of the jumping from branch to branch. He slipped. I didn't see if he actually went onto the ground, but he definitely went down. A little bit later on, we saw him return, and he was climbing his way back up, and he was really struggling, but he climbed his way back up. And yeah, so then he stayed around for a little bit, and then early afternoon, he decided that he was gonna take his first flight. His was probably, I would say, the shortest flight, and the one that was probably the least advanced. And he went to a nearby tree. So, yeah, it was quite interesting over those 5 days, and just to see the different personalities and characteristics of what they did when they decided it was time for them to venture out.
Yeah, yeah. And just backtracking a little bit, a couple of podcasts ago, you mentioned how this youngest one was an abnormally large egg. And so there was, you know, some like slight curiosity and some slight, obviously wanting to let our imaginations wander and be like, could this mean anything special? It seems like just a standard kestrel, standard development, to made it out just as good, but no better or worse than any of the other nestlings there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's neat. Okay, so now they fledged over the course of 5 days, got out of the nest. What does that look like from your view here from the yard? Obviously, they're not immediately migrating south. They've still got some growing to do, some learning of flying to do, and growing out of feathers and stuff like that. How often are you seeing them, and what are you seeing them do?
Some days, I mean, they're right in our research area, and they hang around here most of the day. Since they started fledging, we've had our blind set up, which is about 100, 110 feet away from the nest box, and we've been doing a lot of filming, getting whatever we can of the young ones and getting fed and so forth. And then some days they're a couple acres over sitting on some dead trees that we know of. Some days they're on some bigger trees that are very close to the nest box. But unless they're sitting on dead branches, it's very difficult to know exactly. We see them flying into some trees, but to actually see them perching in there, it's difficult due to all the leaf growth. So the only time we get to see them, they're sitting around a couple acres away is if they're on dead branches. So we spot them. We do a little bit of filming of that. But anything that's here on our KP poles or the heavy metal tree or wherever they like to sit in our research area, we get some really nice film of them doing different things, you know, and then they'll start to eventually go on the ground and hunt for bugs. But again, as I think we mentioned in the previous podcast, that's when danger is super heavy, because they're not paying attention. They don't know it any better than to hit the ground, grab whatever they're hunting for, which in this case was bugs, and then head back up to a perch somewhere. They sit on the ground and they eat it. So they're very vulnerable at this point in time.
So now, based on your previous years of experience having kestrels in your property here, do you know, or do you have an expectation of how long they will be in the yard?
We've definitely seen differences year over year. This year, the experience has been somewhat similar to last year. The first couple of days, they're really looking for the protection of trees. And so we don't see them a lot in the first 1 to 2 days afterwards. And then they start migrating back. This, of course, is the feeding ground. This is where mom and dad know that they might be, and they're still delivering a lot of food to them. They're delivering bowls, they're delivering bugs to them right in our research area. And then what we tend to see, and we did see that this year again, they seem to group together and they hang out, they play, they chase each other, they try to steal the food from each other, that sort of thing. We have had a couple of days where all five of them were here together and together for a couple of hours. And then a few times we were starting to see the two males and one female, and they were grouping a lot, perching on various poles, branches, and then the parents, of course, were feeding them here in this area as well. So then about 2 days ago, I noticed in the distance, the parents were seeming to fly towards them, fly away from them, fly towards them, fly away from them. So I think that there was a lot of that back and forth, getting them to really start to move around and build up their flying strength. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they had been doing a lot of perching, and so now it's time to really start to to move.
Gym class, get up and
yeah, flap those wings, get going.
So obviously this is not something you would personally be able to observe from your property, but do you know about pattern of migration? Like, do the family migrate together, or do they like leave together and break up at a certain point? Do you know anything about their migration pattern?
They will actually stay as a family unit for, you know, a week to 2 weeks. Then they will start to separate. And typically what the researchers have noticed is that the adults, the females will migrate first. They have tended to molt earlier than the males, so then they're able to migrate sooner than the males. Of course, the young fledglings, they won't molt yet this year, of course. So I'm not sure if they will migrate as a unit. Quite likely not, because they will have done a lot of separating by that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, that's triggering your memory from the presentation, actually, that had on your property a few weeks ago with Jim Duncan, where he was mentioning his I think it was his grad research paper studying incestuous relationships within kestrels, and how if they were together, they wouldn't be picky about whether they were mating with a family member or not. And so maybe that, for their own evolution of kestrels, is probably, I guess they are probably splitting up so that they don't stay together and, you know, spread that gene pool around.
Right.
Yeah. Is much known about where they go in the winter? Like, how big is their winter range?
Well, they will fly south. I mean, there has been reports that some kestrels will migrate, you know, down to Argentina. Now, I don't know if there's any correlation between, you know, how far north, you know, did they come for breeding, and does that have any bearing on how deep south they go? But definitely they will be looking for warmer territory.
Nice, yeah. So what's the most, like, maybe this is a big broad question, but like, what's the most interesting or fascinating thing I think you've learned about kestrels or from kestrels throughout the years of researching and observing them on your property here?
For me personally, it's the family unit. It's amazing to just watch that family dynamic, you know, right from the brooding, where, you know, the female adult is making sure that everyone is, you know, getting some food, sharing, that sort of thing. Then when they fledge, you know, that's really the fun time, because that's really, you know, looking at these young birds, and they're, you know, I mean, we try to, you know, relate it to humans, and I know that's not really necessarily what biologists would be doing, but, you know, we look at them and we go, you know, they're just like kids. They're out there, they're playing, they're taunting each other, they're teasing each other, they're, you know, stealing food from each other and that sort of thing. But it is kind of interesting, because you can see the younger ones, or the curiosity in them. Whether they're watching their siblings, learning from their siblings, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Who's hunting better? Who's flying? You know, and that sort of thing. So that for me is what is really interesting about the kestrels, is just that whole family unit, the personalities.
Yeah. So it's fairly widely known amongst birders, and probably a lot of nature enthusiasts, that peregrine falcons are the fastest animal on the planet, and when they're dive bombing prey, I can't remember what it is, like over like 200 miles an hour, something ridiculous. And kestrels don't reach quite those speeds, but they do have an interesting thing, which is they are the only falcons who can hunt at 0 kilometers an hour. I'm wondering if that's something either you could talk about.
Yeah, it's very interesting. They're like I say, the only falcons that can hover hunt. And this year, we hadn't seen a lot of that, but I did manage to get Mum hover hunting on video, which I've been trying for years and years, and I finally got which I would have had it recording at 120 frames a second because of the slow motion would be a lot better. But I did get a short piece, and it just happened. That might have been even only the one time we've seen them hover hunt this year. I don't know if it's due to the grass in the field behind us is like 3 or 4 feet long. So I don't know if that had any bearing on it, because that's usually the area that they hover hunt. But yeah, it's interesting. They can sit there like a helicopter, you know, to explain it more simply. They can just sit there and they flap their wings and they don't move and they're looking down. And of course, with their keen eyesight and be able to detect urine trails of voles and mice and stuff, bang. But when they do dive, I mean, it is quite, I don't know the exact speed, but it is quite fast, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super quick hurts. And I'm glad you mentioned the urine thing, because that was another thing that I wanted to bring up, because of course... I'm not sure if it's all birds, but definitely the kestrels can see ultraviolet light, which is
comes in
the pee of the bull. And so you can just, imagining that in my head of just sort of like having that bird's eye view of field and just sort of seeing a trail of urine, and that's what you're hunting by. It's super, super fascinating.
And again, you know, anybody that wants to see a part of our research area, we do have a drone shot of it with some explanations of what is what on it. So anybody that wants to go on our website and have a gander at kind of what they see when they're up there.
The kestrel eye view of their
hunting grounds.
So it seems like every year you're tinkering with your setup here on the property in terms of how you observe and cater, I guess, to the to the kestrels. Based on this year's working with the kestrels here, is there anything that you're looking at changing with your setup next year, whether that's with the actual like physical setup for the kestrels or in the way that you video and photography?
Not really. I mean, again, the boxes will come down in the late fall, do any repairs or so forth. One of the boxes, we will be changing the side camera just to put a better one in, like we did this year with the heavy metal kestrel tree box. And other than that, there's really not much to improve on. I don't see us doing really anything changing, like the area, the way we have the KP poles set up, the long patches of grass that we don't cut. I think it's the perfect environment for kestrels, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that must be like a pretty satisfying feeling, I feel like, because it's definitely the setup you have this year is not the setup you had, you know, 7-8 years ago. It's a thing that's improved over time, and so I guess it must be really nice to sort of be at a point where like, okay, this is like, we have a really good setup, and this is just what we're going to do every year. And so you sort of have maybe more consistency year to year. And
yeah, exactly. And again, it's all about learning about the kestrels, what they like, and, you know, trying to apply that to our research area.
So now, Kim and Rick, you are both retired, at least professionally, but of course this has been more than a full-time job for you, basically since, you know, like mid-late March when the female first arrives. I imagine probably feeling a lot of things right now, some like bittersweet feelings of like, you know, they're gone, but also like, finally they're gone.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, you know, we miss them when they're gone. There's no doubt about that. When I mean, it's almost like we're part of the family, because of this, you know, the amount that we watch them, it's 24/7 basically until we know for a fact they are gone out of the area. So yes, it will be nice to kind of get back to a normal life, like being able to go out together to do filming out in the wild and whatnot, and simple things like just to go to the zoo instead of, well, okay, I got to go out and do this. Well, you got to stay here glued to the situation to make sure you record and writing and in video everything that's happening. So yeah, it's exactly like you said, it's bittersweet. but it's nice to see them develop and do well. Mm-hmm. Makes us feel good.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, it's very fulfilling, you know, just to know that on, you know, a small piece of land like we have, okay, it's a bit bigger than most city lots, but, you know, that what we can do to help a species that's in decline, you know, and knowing that we have within our, you know, small control, we've done our part, we've given them a home, we've given them safety within their immediate territory, and knowing that over the years, you know, we've had 35 little fledglings leave mm-hmm. from a nest box from our property, you know, so that's very, it's very fulfilling, it's very rewarding, so it's certainly worth the effort.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, and once they leave our area here, I mean, the life of a fledgling is very, very tough. You know, honestly, lots of them probably don't make it to be a year old, but we don't know. We can't follow their migration patterns and follow them during migration and where they go once they leave here. So we feel that as long as they're here, we protect them, we make sure they're protected, so at least they get a good start to their lives. And again, with banding them now for 3 years, if somebody finds one deceased or are recapturing for you know, further analysis and whatnot, they will know where these kestrels came from.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other thoughts or observations that we haven't chatted about today that you think listeners might be interested in hearing?
Well, it's interesting and kind of hilarious because some of the young ones have dropped their voles and fumble talons, as I call it. Eh? And it's funny that when you're videoing it and then you watch the video back and you see the reason why. In one case, one of the males, he had a vole in his left talon, and he was picking at it. And then instead of holding it down with both talons, he decided he wanted to scratch his leg. So he picked up his talon and plop. And it's really funny, over the years, even the parents, if they drop a vole and it hits and it's up on the ground, they don't seem to want to go after it. They just leave it there. Huh. So this year we had two males do fumble talons. So I went out there after they left, found the vole, picked it up, and put it on one of the lower branches of the heavy metal kestrel tree. Hmm. And guess what? Mom found it, or Pops found it, and took it and fed it to them. So,
okay.
So, but yeah, it's interesting that they will not retrieve it when it hits the ground. Even mm-hmm. parents, we've seen them drop it, and they kind of look down and go, oh, well, there's tons of them around, so oh, well.
it's interesting behavior. If it's on the ground, not interested, but flying in, hey, there's a random half-eaten vole on this branch.
Well, the thing is, they do store food when it's in, you know, when there's lots of food and they know they're going to need it. They do store it. They store it on the ground. We have a evergreen out in the research area, and I've even got photos of the storage voles inside there. I watch and I see them putting it in there, so I run out there with the camera. And again, that is on our website, you know, showing these kestrels do store their food for, you know, maybe times when there isn't a lot of voles running around. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to watch them go and store food, and you can tell they've got something. They may be out of the box when the young ones are still inside, and it's like nobody's really hungry. So they either eat it or they figure, well, we'll store it, we'll use it for later.
Yeah, that's really neat, and just sort of seems like a whole separate area of research. I know there's lots of research been done on species like jays and chickadees in terms of like seeing how impressive their memories are for being able to, and in their case, they're stashing sometimes thousands of nuts and seeds around. So obviously kestrels are not dealing with those kinds of numbers, but it would be interesting to see what the recovery rate is on those, like if they can remember every single place that they've stashed them, and if they go to them in the order that they left them to reduce spoilage and wastage of the food. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah. But definitely in our evergreen that's in our yard, the only one, and it's about 7 feet tall, they definitely remember they stored their food in there, the voles and or mice, because we've seen them come back and pick it up, the parents, and feed it to the young ones.
Yeah.
So that we know for a fact. But as far as, you know, if they have 5 or 6 stored ones, do they remember where everyone is? We've even seen them store stuff on the roof. There's a little cutout in the back of the heavy metal box that the big steel pole is on. And there's a little ledge in there. And we've even seen them store it in there and then come and pick it up. But yeah, it is interesting to watch them and know that they do store food. Sometimes they do leave it inside the box, but not a lot, eh? But, and again, different parents do different things. I think it was last year when Dr. Duncan went in a nest box to retrieve the chicks for banding. There were 2 or 3 meadow voles whole still in the box. Mm. So again, every parent may have a different idea of what they want to do with these stored items.
And then just to further to what you said, John, about nothing goes to waste. On the day that the last male fledged, it was like the female came back and she was doing house cleaning. So she went into the nest box. The male had dropped off a good size vole earlier that morning. And so, of course, it was still there. So she went in and she picked that up and she brought that out and obviously ate it or fed it to one of the fledglings. And then a little bit later on, she came back in and she kind of rooted through some of the pellets that were there and just looking for any other leftovers. So making sure that nothing was absolutely going to go to waste.
Mm-hmm. That's super interesting to see.
Plus, to also add to that, leaving food inside the nest box is just more apt to attract predators, whether it be most likely other birds, like magpies, things like that. So they do try to keep the inside of that nest box reasonably clean.
Yeah, because there's multiple reasons for wanting to do that then, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the female this year, she even used the nest box a couple of times to, I'm not sure what it was, if the nestlings were, you know, chasing her and she wasn't quite ready to give it to them. But one time she went into the nest box and she ate the head off of the vole, plucked it, and then she left the nest box and gave it to them. So, you know, was she being chased and she just wasn't quite ready to give it up because she knew that it wasn't ready for them? Was there, you know, another, you know, magpie or something chasing her and she just wanted, you know, some peace and quiet?
Yeah.
Just really interesting behavior to see that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no shortage of interesting behaviors and observations going on. Yeah. And every year, I imagine, is something new.
Yeah, different personalities, behaviors that you see the pair, you know, between themselves or with their with their offspring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Well, yeah, just I want to say thank you one last time, Kim and Rick. It's been a joy coming out here and chatting with you regularly and seeing this kestrel family develop and now fledge, and it's been great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So it's anyone's guess how these raptors will do for the remainder of the summer and migration. But I do know that next year Kim and Rick will be ready when March rolls around to see who shows up to stake a claim on their land. And wouldn't that be something if one of them had a band on its leg from a previous year here. But that is about it for this season following the kestrels. Thanks so much for tuning into this series. I hope you are able to learn a lot about these little raptors. And remember, you can always check out the new Sun Cinema website at nu-sun.com. kestrelcorner.com and follow the links to Kestrel Corner, where you can find tons of photos, videos, and other information, as well as this podcast. Till next time, take care.